Episode 54 of This Developing Story. So this week everything's new. Everything's basically, it's like it started over. I originally started this podcast as a intro to San Francisco and my opinions and my experiences on what happens as a developer transitioning into San Francisco. Also my personal story as it continues to unfold of me learning new technologies and new things at work. And so now I have done my first career change since being in San Francisco. It's not my first career change or my job change since being a developer. But yeah, it's quite different. It's not only quite different, I'm also at a smaller company too. It's more earlier on. So Block had just got their Series A and pretty established as far as that in the industry as far as boot camps. And so this new company I'm with is actually Netlify. If you've been following me on Twitter or if you've been talking to me directly, I've already probably told you what company I'm working with. But Netlify, it's a CDN host. They use the term static hosting, but it's actually not limited to just static hosting. So the reason we say static hosting is because it's usually just front-end heavy websites. So Angular, Ember, React, we can host. But also like Jekyll and Hugo and Gatsby and Roots and all those other static site generators also hosted pretty easily. So I guess I'll just go into a little more detail too. And so with Netlify, we are focusing on the Jamstack, which actually my interviewee is going to be mentioning a little bit about. And so we focus on that, and we focus on this sites that can be built and minified and hosted pretty easily. So if you have a chance, check out netlify.com. I'm sure I'll mention more about it in the future. My guest today is actually Matthias Billman, goes by Matt. He's the CEO of Netlify. He actually created all of the product of Netlify to begin as an MVP a year ago, actually a little more than a year ago. And I had him on. He has an interesting story. He's actually from Denmark. So he actually has a music degree, but it found its way in the programming. So I'll let you listen to how he explains that, and I hope you guys enjoy. So coming up next is Matt Billman.
Yeah, so I'm Matt Billman, and I'm one of the founders of Netlify, which is a platform for deploying modern static websites. I'm sort of the technical co-founder of Netlify, so I was the one that built all the initial platform before we started growing and hiring. Before I did Netlify, I did a fully hosted content management system called WebPop. And before I did that, I was CTO of a company in Spain.
So before we get into that, can you explain how you got into programming? Because I think your story is actually pretty interesting.
I didn't take any sort of straight path at all. My background is I studied musicology at the University of Copenhagen and comparative literature and modern cultural studies. Also worked for a while as a musical journalist for the Danish radio. But I've been programming since I was 12 years old, and started when I got a Commodore 64, which was like a really big deal back then. Finally, I managed to convince my parents to buy an old used Commodore 64 or something like that, and sort of immediately fell in love with the idea of being able to write something that made something happen on the screen. And I was just sort of always programming. I took another career path initially and started studying the more humanistic faculty of music and literature and so on, but was always just my procrastination at any point would always be to program, right? When I had like an important exam paper I had to hand in, and the things I would sit and do to not work on the paper was like building a database-driven website for a guy in the States that I had met on IRC for free, because I didn't consider it anything that at the time was just a hobby.
So what was the disconnect between... So you did music, I guess. Was that more of like your first passion, or did you...
Yeah, it was a big passion. I played the piano and got really hooked on playing classical piano and got into the whole... I've always been very interested in understanding what makes something like music and literature and so on have an effect on the world, and what it actually, why does it have meaning? And especially music is fascinating there because it's so abstract, right? Like, especially like when you go back to classical music and so on, where a large part of it is really just instrumental, right? It's really just abstract structures in time expressed through sound somehow, right?
Yeah.
Why does it make people feel stuff, and how does it actually become a part of... How does it even become something that dictatorships are afraid of and will, like, censure and things like that, right? That was really interesting to me because I think it says a lot about how we create meaning of the world as human beings. So I was fascinated by that and studied that, and always had this passion for programming. There was, I think, just part of, like, I've always liked to create stuff, like, and programming has this amazing thing that you can just sit with nothing and create something, right? Like, you can really just write some lines of code on screen and make something that can even affect other people, and that people can actually do things with and interact with, which is really special.
Which, same with music too, I imagine.
There's actually quite a connection, I think, and in some ways you could say like that the old classical composers were the first programmers, right? Because it's kind of the same thing you do, right? You like, you have to sit down and write this script that you give to like a machine, which is an orchestra that then sort of turns it into music, right? But you have to, in your head, be able to have that concept of an abstract structure that's going to be sort of executed over time, and that also very much interacts with the listener or the user or whatever, right? So I think there's some similarities to the patterns of thought between music and programming, for sure.
Cool. So then you did music journalism?
Well, I studied musicology, which is like the study of music history and musical analysis and some composition and so on. But especially in Denmark, it's very much like how literature is not a course to... It's not something you study in order to be a writer. You study it in order to know about how writing works. And musicology in Denmark is sort of at least supposed to be the same way, where it's a theoretical study of music. And I studied that and then went and got an internship in the Danish radio, which is a bit like the BBC of Denmark. It's like the main public service broadcaster, right? And they had at the time, and it's probably still the largest, at the time it was the largest web property in Denmark, was the RDK.
Okay.
And they had a whole section about music. And I started there just as an intern and then became like a freelance writer and freelance editor, and was often handling like the pages about jazz and classical music. Did a lot of reviews, had a lot of fun also getting tons of free concert tickets and CDs and so on. And was in many ways well on my way to make that my career. But then... as things happened, I met this girl traveling in Budapest together with Chris, who is now my co-founder of Netlify. And by random coincidence, I ran into Irene, who is my wife today. And she was traveling in Budapest as well, but she was from Spain.
Yeah.
And as things went, like, I went and visited her in Spain, she went and visited me in Denmark, I went a little to Spain, she went a little to Denmark, and then decided to go to Spain and sit there to finish up. Like, my initial idea was that I would go there and then stay for a while and finish up my thesis in musicology. Didn't quite work out that way. I went to Spain and I was sitting there writing a bit of my thesis, also starting to procrastinate a bit more with my good old programming. Started to do things, started realizing that I would want to stay in Spain for quite a while, and that there for some reason wasn't this amazing market for writing about music in Danish in Madrid.
Yeah. It's
a big surprise at the time.
No, I can imagine.
So I just started doing a project. So I just started building a browser-based space game. It was like, this must have been like 2005, I guess. And I saw that there was just, that browsers were starting, this actually, now that I think about it, become quite a theme in what I'm doing today, but I started to see that browsers were starting to become powerful enough that you could do really interesting things there. And I started to see some of the really early, like there was some really, shitty zombie game in the browser, just like ASCII graphics that had like 60,000 players using it, and so on. That's something interesting. So just started building this space game where you could like have your own little spaceship and then travel from planet to planet and solar system to solar system in like a procedurally generated galaxy with like realistic, like it was all just 2D, like you would see it, right? But it was all like realistically calculated orbits and planets and everything. Like I found this old algorithm from a scientific paper from the 70s about star formation that was meant to be run on supercomputers back in the 70s, and discovered like in 2005 you could just run it during a web request and generate a star system from it that was like looked like a real star system, right? So so I made that and visualized the star systems in Flash at the time, and then like used the bridge between Flash and JavaScript so we could have like a little chat and stuff and navigate around. And it was fun, and then I started just showing that to some people, and I never managed to finish it. And then I got an offer to join a Denver-based startup called CreateBus. And again, this was like in the time where everybody was trying to build a social network because they were seeing Facebook and MySpace and so on, right? So this was a social network built in Ruby and Rails.
Okay.
And we were just like 2 to 3 programmers working remotely from different places, mostly just for equity, which turned out to never be anything worse. Like the project was not a big success. I think they got like 5,000 users, but would have needed like way more than that to ever.
Well, I assume take off. I've never heard of CreateBus.
No, I think like sadly enough, probably no one has. Yeah. But it was an experience, right? And there was like the first time I really took like, became part of a team of like where the others were also like professional developers and so on, and it's kind of funny because development had always just been a sort of a hobby for me, and suddenly I was working like as a senior developer, and actually ended up being the one that like also did all the infrastructure and set up the servers and so on, apart from the Rails development.
So you mentioned you're from Denmark. Did you get on the Rails bandwagon because of DHH also being from there, or was that coincidental?
It was coincidence. I just read about Rails and Slashdot, followed the link, saw the famous like make a blog in 15 minutes tutorial, and was like, I'll try to make a blog. and I made a blog in Rails. And I had, before that I had been doing mostly, I mean, I've been doing all kinds of stuff. I had been doing like C back in the day and like C++, but at that time I was mostly doing all the web stuff in PHP. And Rails sort of just came in with a whole bunch of way, 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 way better conventions for how to do stuff than what was typical in a PHP project of the time, like the much more of an idea of separation of concerns. It really, at the time, unit testing was not something people did. There was like one or two articles I had read about unit testing in PHP, but I had never seen anyone doing it, right? And Rails suddenly just made it a thing you were just supposed to do. There was a ton of changes, and I picked that up quickly, and these first projects I did there on my own was in Rails. And then I actually, like, the next step for me was that I went to the very first Rails conference in Madrid. And at that point, I still hadn't been in Spain for that long, so I had started taking language classes to learn Spanish, but I was still at a very basic level.
Yeah.
And I went there to Rails conference, and were there all of the first day, and everything was in Spanish, right? All the talks were in Spanish, and I really just had to concentrate to follow, like, a bunch of conference talks in Spanish. And so at the end of the day, there was, like, the conference after party. But I was actually thinking, like, I'm dead. Like, I've been listening to Spanish now for, like, a whole day and trying to follow, and I'm just ready to go home and drop dead. And I went to the metro and went into the train.
Yeah.
And after, like, two stations, I realized, I've taken the wrong train. But I also realized that train was going to the station where they had said the after party was.
Yeah.
I also didn't know where it was, but then I thought, okay, man, I better just go. And I went off the train, and I spotted a guy I'd seen at the conference, and went over and asked in my broken Spanish if he knew where the party was. And he said, like, yeah, but we're going to have some tapas first. Like, why don't you join us for that? And joined them for tapas, and I think 2 months later I started working at their company as a senior developer.
Oh, wow. So, oh, cool. Even with your broken Spanish and all.
Even with my broken Spanish at all. Fortunately, with a team there where the main guy there spoke okay English, and the designer, they had just hired a designer from the Philippines that also didn't speak Spanish, so we spoke in English. And then I quickly, then once I worked there, you know, just being at lunch with people speaking another language every day, I started picking it up much faster and started speaking. Today I'm fluent in Spanish. I still sound a little funny and have a weird accent and make strange mistakes, but I can understand everything and speak the language, like, without issues. But that all started just from working in that situation
and yeah,
picking up. And then things just went step by step. I started working on a project, then ended up sort of taking over that project, then ended up being, like, the general director of development for the company, and then became the CTO of the company, and did that for a while. And then back in 2011, I then the company there was a company that was they were building websites for small to medium businesses in Spain and the areas around it, but at a very high scale. So we were at a point we were building around 100 websites a week, with a network of freelance designers that would do the actual design work, and then yeah, in-house sales team, support team, project management team, art direction team, and 20-plus people tech team, building out the whole platform that the designers would do the design on, and the end users would use for the content management, and that ran the whole workflow from brief coming in to a website coming out in the other end. And what happened was that we always kind of wanted to take that platform in a way and make it available to other agencies and so on.
Yeah.
And we just didn't have the, you know, when you have 10,000 clients of a certain kind, you can't have another kind of client also and really focus on it. So we could never really find a way to focus on actually building the platform itself just as a standalone product. So we made a spin-off, and I founded a company called Webpop together with the founders of Domestika.
Okay.
And
Domestika was a company that you were working for?
That was a company I worked for there, right? Today they're doing something quite different. They had another part of Domestika that was a community for designers, and now they've grown that into the largest Spanish-speaking design community with more than 300,000 members. But we started at that point together Webpop, which was really, like, built on the idea of taking all of the experience from building all of these websites and from building that platform, and then building a fully hosted CMS for for other agencies or freelancers that they could use to get some of the same efficiencies in building websites for their clients.
Yeah.
And I was initially the CTO in that company as well, and built out that platform, and it was what brought me to the Bay Area. It was essentially my co-founder in Webfab, Julio, who's like a great Spanish character, and he came back from a trip to the Bay Area organized by, I think, the Chambers of Commerce in Spain. And he came to me and he was like, "Matias, we have to go to San Francisco. We have to go." And I was like, "Yeah, sure, I don't know. Like, I've never been. Sounds interesting. Get a tourist visa. Go there for 2 months. And then come back and tell me if we have to go or what." It's like, okay. Grabbed the visa, went with my wife, spent 2 months over here, and came back and said, "You're right, we have to go." and then we made it happen, and that's what brought me here initially.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, from Webpop. So that kind of clears up a lot of stuff for me, because a lot of our stuff's kind of, it's still nested under Webpop.
Yeah, it was where it all started in a way, and then as it happened that apart, we sort of parted ways in terms of doing Webpop. Julio, the founder of Domestic, has started doing Domestica.org, which is their community, which is an awesome project as well, a really cool project. And I took over Webpop and started just like making that into a company. But while doing that, I really started to see these new... I started to see that all of these changes happening that affected front-end developers, essentially, both around Git becoming really important, around modern build tools becoming really important, and static site generators emerging, and again, the browser just becoming more and more powerful. So much of this stuff you had always needed, like a dynamic backend for, you could just do in the browser. And then based on that, I started like a small MVP called BitBalloon. Got some real traction with that, and reached out to Chris, who's my co-founder today of Netlify, and who's an old friend way back from high school in Denmark, and known each other forever, and started talking about, hey, let's do something in this space, because it's about to get, there's some massive change that could happen if the right people built the right platform for it to happen. And we started building that with Netlify.
Cool. Yeah, and that's basically how we are here today.
Yeah.
I now work for you.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, and I was a user. So it's actually funny, because I met you briefly at the Ember meetup. It was one of the first meetups I actually attended in San Francisco.
Oh, cool.
And so the little bit that you talked about, which is basically the Jamstack.
Yeah, absolutely.
You basically, your actual presentation was actually around that.
Yeah.
And then how you could actually deploy Ember apps and et cetera to Netlify. So it was a really good timing, because the product that I was using was actually not going on there. It was purchased.
Yeah.
And so I needed something else to move onto.
Yeah.
And so I've been using Netlify since, like, literally since that moment.
Yeah.
And
awesome.
Yeah, it works out really well. So can you explain a little more in detail, like, what Jamstack is?
So the Jamstack is really just like, it stands for JavaScript APIs and markup. And it's a word it's a terminology we've started to use to describe this new stack for building modern websites and apps that's not like something new in itself. Like, we've been seeing over the last 5 years this stack emerging and seeing people build sites in this way. And it sort of encapsulates the trends of starting to use build tools. On the one hand, just like low-level tools like Gulp and Grunt and Brunch and so on for front-end projects, where 5 years ago you were not building stuff in a front-end project, right? You would just like FTP into a server and do stuff.
Yeah.
And today that compilation phase is completely mainstream, right? And that also means that static site generators, which also sort of came up around the same time as like GitHub Pages and Jekyll emerged and has grown into their own thing, it becomes like a very little mental step going from just always compiling your SaaS and your front end to saying, like, let's compile the whole site. Like, let's just build out static markup. And then the other big thing, apart from like Git and build tools happening, was just this what we call the API economy, right? Like that by now there's so many services and APIs that you can consume directly from the browser without having to necessarily build anything yourself. And that works and that works because the browser has become powerful enough, right? That if you want to add comments to a site, or you want to do live streaming of something, or you want a live chat, or if you want a customer's interaction panel, or any of those things, like today it all happens by pulling in some little script from someone and running it client side. Whereas before, it was every one of these things was something that would mean that the only way to build this project would be to have some big monolithic dynamic app, right? And that's just not the case anymore. So that all of these things have sort of come together to really form a new stack that's becoming mainstream for building websites and apps today, but that we still don't have a good terminology about, right? So people have been, like myself included, have been talking a lot about like static sites and static hosting and so on, but it's like very misleading term, because the sites people are building with this are in no way static. They are very dynamic and talk to a lot of dynamic backends, just not in a monolithic way. So we like Chris and I started to talk to a whole bunch of sort of the people that were driving this and was in the space, like creators of static site generators, like Thomas Reynolds that did Middleman, and the team at Carrot that did Roots, and the guy behind Gatsby, and so on. All these people started talking to Tom Preston Werner from GitHub and Adam Wiggins from Heroku, and so on. And it was just obvious that everybody was sort of screaming for, like, we need some way to describe what it is we're actually doing. And the term that sort of organically emerged around that was the Jamstack. It's just like a little of a parallel to the LAMP stack that was like the old approach, but also symbolically has sort of moved up a level where in the LAMP stack it was all about like the very concrete, like Linux, Apache, PHP, and MySQL. But with the Jamstack, it's more about like there's just this delivery mechanism of JavaScript that's the main runtime, then markup that you pre-build as much as possible, and then APIs that you communicate to either during some build phase or directly from the browser. And it's become like also a stack that allows you to stop thinking about servers in the way that people have been doing until now, right? You just think about like delivering this markup in JavaScript and talk to these APIs and then just push that to a CDN somewhere, which is a really big change and which is something that can make individual front-end developers way more powerful, because they can suddenly essentially do whole projects without handing it over to a back-end team that needs to pull it into their back-end side of thing. Like, they can really just like work on a self-standing front-end and build very, very complex products in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really exciting, especially like with the way JavaScript's moving as a as a whole.
Yeah.
And not only not just that, but also this build tools in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like so many new things. And I've only been doing this like 2.5 years, but there's so many things that have emerged in the short amount of time I've been doing this.
Yeah.
It blows me away how easy it is today compared to what it was like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, on the one hand, like when you've been here 10 years, right, or more, and like when I come back to like, since I started developing, right, it's been more like 27 years. Oh man,
yeah,
I feel old now when I say that. But yeah, I've been. I mean, in some ways, it's become so much more complex, right? Because there's this explosion of tools and frameworks and capabilities and APIs you can talk to and solutions and what do I know, right? Back from compared to when I started out, when I would turn on my Commodore 64 and I would get a blinking cursor, and then you had to type BASIC or you could use machine code, right? And there was like, that was the two options, right? And it was so simple in a way. But of course, on the other hand, the incredible thing is that today, like a single developer can really build very big real projects that can immediately be distributed to everybody in the world and have an effect like that. And the ease of doing that is like, while the complexity in general might be more overwhelming now, like the yeah. ease of actually just completely on your own sitting down and building something that can reach billions of people, right? That's mind-blowing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And on that note, I really appreciate you taking the time to explain like who you are and where you came from, because it was pretty fascinating for myself. I'm sure I'll find out more about you as I work
no
for
doubt.
You. But yeah, thanks for coming on. And
thanks for having me.
So that was Matt Bildman, my new boss and CEO. Yes, super interesting story. It's I think more and more as I interview people, I found out more and more that most people who are in this for 10 years plus haven't found their way through actual traditional means. I think most people had the same sort of issue as me, not knowing that programming was a career that would be possible for them, and then eventually find them their self making their way towards that. So I find that even more and more interesting as I find more people who not only have started programming within the last 5 years, but even more like 10 plus years, how their degrees were organized. Even some of the people I've had in the past who actually got technical degrees but weren't actual computer science degrees. I think that's also common. But yeah, as I interview more and more people, I guess we'll find out more about that together. This is an every week podcast, so I hope you come back every single week. If you haven't had a chance to review this on iTunes, please review that. I just got one review, and yeah, that was nice. It's good to read those. Also, if you have any feedback for me, email me at hello@briandouglas.me. Twitter is @bdougieyo. And also, there's comments on the website, which is developingstory.link. I imagine I'll be doing a lot more stuff in the coming future. My position, actually, I didn't even get into my position, so I'm glad you stuck around. My position actually is mainly on the front end. I'm going to be doing a lot of React, converting Angular to React for their main app on Netlify.com. And once I get that out of the way, I'll actually be doing a lot more podcasting. Actually, we have another podcast in the works. Probably in the next month, we will probably see another podcast show up that I'll be tweeting out. And I will also be doing some tutorials. I'll be doing some talks, some meetups, some conferences, and all around this new position I'm in. So I think this is actually a unique position to be in with the way Jamstack is going and the way how it's easy to deploy new sites. I've just recently done a tutorial that I'll be showing off pretty soon of how to start up an Ember app and then deploy it to Netlify within like less than 10 command line commands. And yeah, it's just super fascinating stuff, at least for me. Hopefully other people find this fascinating. I am sure you will. So yeah, keep in touch, and I will see you next week.